This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So what do we do now in the Senate? There are a couple of different ideas. Explain them clearly to the people watching tonight because they think, well, you can't stop a court. A court wants to rule. All right, why isn't that okay?
One of the best things we could do is pass legislation that I introduced day before yesterday that would limit the jurisdiction of the courts, making it so that a single district judge can't issue an injunction against the U.S. government with nationwide applicability on a major matter of presidential policy. It needs to be going through a three-judge district court with an automatic direct appeal to the Supreme Court of the United States. It would make it very difficult to judge shop, and it would make it so we get a final resolution from the Supreme Court.
Would
quickly.
This be a rotating panel
yes.
of district court judges?
Rotating panel of district court
random.
Judges selected by the Chief Justice at random from available district judges around the country. That way you can't go into this. If you're an NGO, if you're one of these liberal activist groups, you can't just judge shop and know that if you file in a certain district, odds are pretty good you're going to get a lefty.
Senator Lee, they're talking about judge shopping. We're hearing a lot of this right now about the pushback against Donald Trump. And I'm scratching my head going, how is it that you can just kind of set up this house of cards to try to push back against something if you don't have the legislative power in Congress because you're in the minority in the House and in the Senate? How can you use the judiciary in this fashion in order to push back against Donald Trump when it seems to be very politically motivated? Well, since I'm not a legal expert, don't pretend to be one at all. Will Chamberlain's back with us, and we're really grateful for his expertise, of course. Senior counsel at the Article 3 Project on X at Will Chamberlain. Will, welcome back. It's always good to have you here.
Good to be with you, Annie.
So can you talk to me a little bit about what judge shopping is, how the left is using this as a way to push back against Trump?
Well, I mean, it's something both sides have used in the past. Obviously, the left is using it more now because they're trying to stop the administration. But the basic idea is that there are a lot of judicial districts in this country, and some of them have more liberal judges and more conservative judges. Some of them are small enough that they only have one judge. So if you file a lawsuit in that courthouse, you know basically who your judge is going to be. So that, you know, opens up a possibility, especially when you're filing a case and you're seeking a nationwide injunction. Well, you want to go find a judge that is most likely to agree with you. So if you're a liberal, that means going to a hard left district where you're confident that you know the judge and you know that they'll go along with you. That's judge shopping.
So when Senator Mike Lee is looking to push back against this, I mean, I assume there are some avenues that can be used. I heard on, I think it was Harris Faulkner's show earlier today, an expert talking about how a lot of what is done in Washington is creating the system to be so burdensome that people are afraid to even engage in things that would be transformative to how, you know, things work. I think we call that the swamp. And when things become so burdensome and so scary because, oh, the legal battle is going to be enormous, then what ends up happening is you kind of scrap things before they even start. Is that part of the factor of what the swamp has been doing, at least pre-Donald Trump 2.0?
Yeah, I mean, they want to demoralize people who actually want to change the system, certainly. And there are all sorts of entrenched interest groups who also want to demoralize the administration and don't want to let the administration do anything that might hurt them in any way. So you're going to get lawsuits. I think generally in the past, we haven't had administrations who are devoted or really aggressively trying to fight through that. you know, who are happy to be in power or otherwise willing to focus on things where they won't face as much judicial pushback. But that's not this current Trump administration. Clearly, the Trump administration is willing to pick all these battles and is planning to fight them as long as they need to. And truly, in some cases, if needed, potentially even disregard courts that are infringing on the president's core Article II powers. Hopefully, though, that won't be necessary. And I think what this is doing, though, is really highlighting, obviously, the problem with the system where a single district judge can impose an injunction that binds the administration throughout the entire country. And it creates this judge shopping dynamic and the ability of, you know, 160 some judges each to have an individual veto on the administration's policy. That's not the way our system is supposed to work. And so, I mean, the Mike Lee's suggestion, I think, is a good one, where it just ends judge shopping and ensures that a three judge panel has to agree that an injunction would be necessary. I've heard of other solutions that also could be interesting, limiting the effect of a nationwide injunction just to the district in which that judge is ruling, prohibiting them from going beyond the parties to that case, and in some cases restructuring our courts to strip them of jurisdiction over particular issues, so that where the politics of it is kind of determining how the judges rule. So all those are good ideas, and I think, you know, I just hope Congress is able to push some of them forward.
Yeah, I think that that's the question mark, of course, is that if Congress would be willing to come together for this. Do you feel as though, I was just thinking, it was this morning or something, about how a lot of this has gone. There have been comments made by the Supreme Court justice, the Chief Justice, that have some Trump people scratching their heads. We've seen Amy Coney Barrett not rule in the way that I think Donald Trump would have preferred that she ruled. There's no possibility that the Republicans start talking about expanding the court right now, is there?
I mean, there's an interesting option to say that, you know, we need to have a constitutional amendment that fixes the number of judges on the court at 9. And then if the Democrats won't agree to pass it, then we're going to pack the court ourselves. You know,
I like that's kind of interesting.
Like, it's like one or the other. Like, you either agree that this isn't just going to be a norm anymore. This is going to be a permanent structure. Or if you don't agree to this, then we assume that you'll do it when you have the chance. So we're just going to beat you to it. Which I think is actually the right attitude, honestly. Like, I think that needs to be a serious discussion to have with Schumer, that, like, while we have the majority.
What you just said is my co-host is going to fall off his chair because he's so excited about what you just said about that idea of doing it that way.
Right.
He's A-OK.
That's, I mean, but it's what we should do. I mean, Democrats do unprecedented things all the time. The only reason they didn't pack the court when they had Joe Biden in power is because you had two Democrat senators who are holding the line on the filibuster and holding the line on norms, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. They're both gone. They're out of office. So who's left among the Democrats who's willing to stand up and say, I'm not going to get rid of the filibuster, or I'm going to block any attempt to pack the court? And if the answer is zero, then Republicans shouldn't be suckers. We should force them to, you know, present it. It's an ultimatum. Like, either you agree to permanently fix the court at 9 seats, or we add 6 more. 7 more. We're going to spend the entire a ton of time in the Senate just adding Supreme Court justices, so many that you won't be able to confirm them. You know, like, we'll just keep doing it.
We should stop this interview right now. Everybody should stop what they're doing and make that happen. Vote on it or lose at your own game. Will Chamberlain is a genius. I don't know if you came up with that or if you heard it, but
not my idea. I wish I had.
Yeah, as
not
far as idea. The Annie Frye Show is concerned, Will Chamberlain, you just blew our minds on that. That doesn't happen very often.
Right.
I want to ask you about the just a little bit outside of the court system, but the attacks that the left is making on Tesla. There, I hear people talking regularly about how this is terrorism, or this is not terrorism, this is just vandalism. And I'm wondering what your thought is on the appropriate way for our justice system to approach these people who are having a really, really rough time with Donald Trump being the president, and their natural reaction is to see a Tesla and just black out and start vandalizing things. Is it important for an administration to push back on something specific like this, which is obviously an ideology that they are opposed to that's causing this vandalism to occur? What is the just thing to happen for these people who are building on this Tesla vandalism march?
Yeah, throw the book at them. You know, and certainly that's not something the Democrats hesitated to do at all with, you know, for example, the J6 protesters. Throw the book at them. They're committing crimes. And I don't know. I'm not super familiar with the terrorism statutes, but my guess is those statutes read something like, if you commit a crime with the purpose of getting a political actor to do or not do something, that becomes a terroristic crime. You commit a violent crime with that intention, that becomes terrorism, and that increases the sentencing. And we have a lot of different places in the law where your intent or what you're trying to accomplish with a crime can increase the sentencing. Hate crimes is the most obvious example. Like, if you commit a crime motivated by racial animus, that increases the punishment. So same here. I would assume that those laws are already on the books. I'm just not an expert, so I don't know. But if those laws are on the books, you throw the book right at those protesters.
Do you feel as though Pam Bondi, as the attorney general, is going as fast and as hard as we need her to go?
Yeah, I mean, she's only we're barely 2 months into the administration. You know, I think we're spoiled. A lot of things have run really well for us so far. For example, border crossings are down 95% in 2 months. That's crazy. Really credit to the administration for understanding how to really, you know, deter illegal immigration. They've done a great job of that. And we're pushing forward on any number of fronts. So she's a very busy woman. I suspect, you know, they've opened those investigations. The law moves slowly. You need to collect all the evidence. You need to get what you need to. And there have been some indictments already. I know that there have been some federal indictments going forward, but it just takes time. You have to identify the people. If they do a good job covering their tracks, wearing masks, things like that, then it probably is trickier. But I have not seen anything to make me think that it is Pam Bondi's fault that indictments aren't moving faster.
So Will Chamberlain, speaking with us right now with the Article 3 Project, expert when it comes to these the justice system, the legal issues that we're facing as a country, that the administration is facing. We've had a kind of an ongoing conversation on this show about the desire for people to see the perp walks. They want to see handcuffs. They want to see orange jumpsuits. They just really, really want the visual. And I've been trying to say to people, and you might admonish me on this and say that I'm wrong, and that's fine, but the success of the Trump administration can't boil down to just who we see perp walked, because you might never see the perp walk that you've been dying to see, and yet the transformation can still happen, the corruption can be rooted out, the fraud can be exposed. What do you think about that, especially on social media, that clamoring for people to see the arrests, the perp walks, the handcuffs, the whole nine yards?
So, I mean, first off, it takes a while, right? Like, and you should think about it from what the Democrats had worked, you know, baying like wolves trying to get Trump arrested and indicted. It took them 3 years before they got that. So we're 2 months in. They had to wait 3 years for their indictments. And so and also here, another thing to think about, you know, they lost the election and all those indictments went dissipated into thin air, basically. You know, they got the J6 indictments because those were easier. They were much simpler. There was sort of bipartisan, you know, congressional work to, you know, give DOJ the resources. And in many ways, it was just, you know, people weren't wearing masks or doing anything to hide their identity or location. And they were committing, you know, they had committed obvious crimes based on these statutes. So it was just very straightforward with a lot of what people want in terms of indictments. If you want them to stick, take some time. They just got started. They probably got to fight through a lot of existing DOJ hires who aren't willing to help them or who are going to slow walk. It's going to take more than 2 months. I think everybody needs to, like, you know, retrench and also realize that it's not, you know, the real question is not whether we get these indictments done in 6 months or a year or 2 years. The question is, we got to win again, right? We got to win in 28. We got to have a durable majority, because if you do something slipshod, well, then it goes up, you know, it gets thrown out by the judges. It goes up on appeal. There's all sorts of ways that people can fight back against lawfare, as we demonstrated against all the fight back that we were able to accomplish against the Trump lawfare. And then if you lose and it's politically motivated lawfare, well, then the pardons come out, right? Like, you know, that Pandora's box has certainly been opened at this point. I would expect that, you know, God forbid Democrats win in 28, their president will take office day one and pardon and commute every sentence that has any political valence whatsoever. So I think the measure of the success of the administration is not going to be what powerful people from the other side go to jail. The measure of the success of the administration is going to be, do we win again? And that's not, you know, that's going to ultimately be like, do we solve the immigration problem? Do we make this country safe again? Do we solve the economic problems? Do we solve our foreign policy problems?
That's great perspective.
And then if we do those things, then we'll have the time to ensure that the people who commit the crimes will ultimately face justice and not be pardoned instantly.
Hey, Will, this is Ryan, the guy who is really excited about you playing hardball on the quarterbacking stuff. So I just back to that issue really quick before we run out of time with you. When Mike Johnson comes out and hints at something like, well, if these nationwide injunctions on the president don't stop, like you said, all these just random judges have veto power of the president. We've never seen this before and never intended it to be this way. And Mike Johnson says, well, we have some tools in our shed here. One of them being that we could defund courts. Is that actually likely? Is that politically likely? And then are they really serious about doing something like that?
I think in the event that the courts shut down the president and the president asked them to cut their budget allocation, I think that'll happen. And I mean, it wouldn't take much to really make the job of these courts a lot harder. It would be a big shot across the bow and a big reminder to Judge Roberts, or Justice Roberts rather, that you guys, you are co-equal. You are not superior. You know, you are a co-equal branch. The executive and the legislative branch get to push back on you, take your authority away if you anger them and are doing things that are illegitimate. So, you know, that's one of many tools. I also think one thing Republicans are starting to understand is Democrats are terrified of a government shutdown right now because they're so, that was, you know, they're terrified of what Elon Musk will do if he's not constrained by Congress, if he has the authority to determine what employees are essential. So that gives us insane leverage, you know, coming up in 6 months, if we're still dealing with these temporary restraining orders, basically it can be a take it or leave it offer to the Democrats for continuing to fund the government. That includes provisions like, you don't agree to this, you know, you need to agree to strip these district courts of their temporary restraining order authority, or we'll go to a shutdown and we'll do all sorts of things you don't like. So there's a lot of power that we have. And I mean, it may force them to the table to negotiate. They might think to themselves, too, that, well, we really don't want a shutdown. And also in the event that we win power in the future, this will hamstring the way conservatives might try and use the temporary restraining order against us, which is true. Yeah. You know, we certainly did have used the courts when we're out of power to try and push back on what the government is doing. And we've engaged in our own judge shopping, as I mentioned. So I think there's a real possibility that the Democrats might see it in their decide it's in their best interest to make a deal with us on this.
Will Chamberlain, what a wonderful conversation. We love when you come on with us. And it's interesting to hear. It always feels like when we're in the minority that the Democrats, they just do everything that they can get their fingers on and then some in order to push the Republicans down. And it's interesting to hear this side while we are not in the minority. We appreciate you, Will. We look forward to having you back again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Will Chamberlain is a senior counsel at the Article 3 Project. Go say hello to him on X if you enjoyed that conversation, at Will Chamberlain. And you can go to Article 3, the number 3project.org, if you want to learn a little bit more about him. Really great conversation. I love that. And I mean, duh, why wouldn't you put up amendment right now that says we're going to codify that the Supreme Court has 9 justices on it? Do it right now. And if the Democrats vote against it, then do it. Pack the court.
I can't believe that I haven't heard this yet.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to think of why.
It's such a good idea.
It's like, if not this, then that. And if the Democrats aren't going to agree to it because they want to pack the courts, then you have to beat them to the punch. If they don't want the Republicans to do it, for the same reason the Republicans wouldn't want the Democrats to do it, then compromise, shake hands, 9 it is.
Donald Trump is really good at leverage. What was Will Chamberlain just talking about over and over and over?
All of it.
With different issues, too. Yeah. That was the main one. But there was others in there talking about how they could use the government shutdown to leverage some things. It's all about the leverage that creatively maybe hasn't been used in the past, but it's time to use the leverage that Congress has.
Yeah. Mind blown. Had never heard of that, never thought of it. Will says he didn't come up with it, but in my mind, he did. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We need 20 votes to take phone calls on the YouTube live chat poll question. And I have a feeling that if we do take phone calls on this, I have a feeling we're going to get some people who are very, like, measured. No. Would you support a third term for President Trump yesterday? No, because that goes against the Constitution. That's against what we want. I have a feeling we might get some people on the left who would call, present themselves like a MAGA Republican and talk about why absolutely, yes, you should do this.
Oh, you'd think, really?
Possibly. And then, of course, there might be some people on the other side who are like, how could we possibly be having this conversation?
You know what we should do is when you go to call, you should have to show voter ID.
Yeah, you have to come here and say, I need to see Ethan Hannaford. And he's going to be like, that's not a real ID. I don't accept it. We want to know, would you support a third term for President Trump? Yes or no? YouTube.com/@AnnieFry. The voting is in the live chat of the live broadcast. Come vote. Leave it. You got 18 people left, and we're taking phone calls at the top of the 2 o'clock hour. We'll be right back before the 2 o'clock hour with a little bit about our weekends. Don't go away.